Welcome to an exciting new episode of Next Best Adaptation. Some of you might remember that we previously ran the series back in 2018 when Will hosted several episodes. We read and discussed Beautiful Boy, Boy Erased, and First Man. This year, we're bringing back the series, and we have some very exciting titles lined up to read and share our thoughts on. So if you don't know, Next Best Adaptation is a special Patreon-only part of Next Best Picture, where we read books that are being adapted into films this year. And first, we discuss the book itself, like a book club, and then we talk about how we think the upcoming adaptation is going to go. So I'm Nicole Ackman, and I will be your host for Next Best Adaptation, and I am joined today by Will Mavity.
Hello, hello, hello.
And Dan Baer.
Last night I dreamt I went to Manderley again.
You have to say the entire episode like that. You know that, right?
I'll try.
So as everyone will know at this point from the title, we are here to discuss Daphne du Maurier's classic gothic novel, Rebecca, today. Rebecca was first published in 1938 and was an instant success and has actually never been out of print. It was first adapted for the stage by Daphne du Maurier herself in 1939, and then into a film that was directed by Hitchcock in 1940. It's also been adapted as a radio play, an opera, and even a musical, which is very popular in Germany. But a new film adaptation is coming to Netflix later this year, directed by Ben Wheatley and written by Jane Goldman. It will star Lily James, Armie Hammer, and Kristin Scott Thomas. But before we talk about the film adaptation that is coming, let's talk about the novel. So, first thoughts, guys, what did you think of Rebecca?
My first reaction, I think, when I finished this book was, God, like, why do all these classic novels from so long ago have so many scandalous plot points?
We were texting about this, and I was like, oh, yeah, like, it's never just an ex-wife. There's always a story there, and, like, and it's never just an affair.
Like, it can't just be that the dead wife, you know, had an affair. She had to have multiple affairs, including an incestuous one. And it can't just be that she died. She had to be murdered by her husband, who thought she was pregnant with another man's baby. Like, it's just like, and like, it's regarded as a classic. And I'm just like, but like, have
it's
we got
the Jane Eyre effect?
It is. It is. And you said that, Nicole, but I just keep thinking, like, if this were published today, like, would people be, like, people would be scandalized by that? No? Like, I feel like we've gotten almost more prudish as a society in regards to
well,
these
apparently,
things.
She,
absolutely.
Apparently, she was excluded from some literary circles at the time because they found the material tawdry. And she had a chip on her shoulder her whole life because, you know, there even at the time, there are people like, "Ew, this is trash." So, I mean, it was something considered. But yes, now I think it would be even more so probably regarded in the girl on the train camp, maybe.
Yeah.
And I also think it's interesting that I read this essay, which for one, it compared Rebecca to Jane Eyre and to Gone with the Wind, which I found really interesting. Both of those novels also, like Rebecca, revolve around a property, a great manor house, and how people relate to it. And it kind of, in this article, it said that Maxim's great love isn't Rebecca or the narrator, his second wife, it's Manderley. But it also talked about the fact that from the beginning, this book was marketed as like this great gothic romance, and Mario was kind of like, well, that's not what this is. And even today, I think it has this kind of reputation as, oh, this romance. Yeah. And really, I don't think that's what's going on at the heart of it at all.
Hey there. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema,
our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe? Do we even care if they are? We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.
You've watched them in unforgettable adventures, love affairs, and tragedies. Now it's time to hear their own remarkable stories. From the makers of Death of a Rockstar and Death of a Sports Star, this is Death
Ready.
Of a Film Star.
And action.
Starring Heath Ledger, Marilyn Monroe, Chadwick Boseman, Robin Williams, Carrie Fisher, and Bruce Lee. Search for Death of a Film Star in your podcast app. You've seen them tell stories. Now it's time to tell theirs.
No, that was the other thing. Like, I was shocked how upstairs, downstairs, almost Downton Abbey-esque the storyline is. It's really about a woman from the poor part of England learning to become a lady of high standing, and how she fits in and doesn't fit in this world.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also what's interesting is, in addition to those two genres, it does feel gothic horror-esque. I mean, there's yes. this just palpable sense yeah. of dread on every page through the language. Yeah, you know,
psychological thriller.
It's very, like, ghostly, and there is this thing where Rebecca, the character, does seem to, like, haunt the novel in a way, mm-hmm. in that her presence is always lingering there, yeah. even though, as a reader, you never actually meet Rebecca herself. You only hear about her from different characters. Mm-hmm. So I guess for anyone who is listening who maybe hasn't read it,
we just spoiled
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, I think it's been spoiled
you.
Already.
Yes, but also, like, the book is over 50 years old, so, you know.
Well over 50.
Right, and there is also a famous Best Picture winning film based on this, so I'm sorry if, you know, there are going to be spoilers. But for anyone who maybe doesn't know, spoilers alert, but it is a novel about a young girl of reduced circumstances. You know, there's this idea that she was maybe raised, you know, lower class, but okay, but now she's an orphan, and thus she's having to make her way in the world as this companion to this obnoxious rich woman. And while they're in, what is it, Monte Carlo, they come across this kind of mysterious widower named Maxim de Winter, who kind of takes an interest in this young girl, and they end up married, and he takes her back to his estate, Manderley, which I don't know that it's ever said in the book, but it's kind of understood to be set in Cornwall. And Manderley is actually based on an actual house called, I think it's Minnabilly, which Daphne du Maurier had admired for many years and eventually bought and lived in. And it's kind of about how she has to, like Dan was saying, learn how to be the lady of this great house, but also about how she's kind of haunted by the presence in the house of Maxim's first wife, Rebecca. And there's also this very interesting relationship with the housekeeper, Mrs. Danvers, who was very fond of Rebecca.
Putting it mildly.
Understatement, yeah.
Which is how they would like me to say it in 1938 when the novel came out. But yeah, what did you guys think of Mrs. Danvers as this kind of villainous character, the kind of antagonist in this novel?
I know that people have argued that the book is meant to be kind of a not quite as tragic and also just like a gender swapped Oedipus story. Mm. And that she is the equivalent of Oedipus's father that needs to be killed in order to finally, like, fulfill the prophecy. And in this case, I guess, the narrator has to establish herself as a woman. So she is, you know, she is everything that stands in the narrator's way, and there's this weird kind of psychosexual relationship between all of the above, and certainly between Miss Danvers and the now absent Rebecca. So there's a sexual element here. It is kind of Oedipal, it seems like.
Okay, that scene where she takes the narrator, and for anyone listening, we keep calling her that because she's never named in the novel. Whenever she takes her into the bedroom, or she finds her there, and she's like, let me show you everything. And she's like, here, touch Rebecca's clothes. Here's the nightgown I lay out for her every night. I was like, this so is genuinely creepy. One of the creepiest things I've ever read.
Seriously, but also, like, because even the, and I'll be perfectly honest, somehow I had never seen Rebecca until, like, literally just now before we recorded this. But I had, you know, I had seen bits and pieces of it over the years as, you know, someone who likes film. And so, like, hearing all of those words in the voice of Judith Anderson as Mrs. Danvers, it's even creepier.
Yeah, it's a really creepy role. And I think it is really interesting whenever you look at the kind of implications of the relationship between Rebecca and Mrs. Danvers. It has been read at times, sometimes as Mrs. Danvers being more like a pseudo mother figure to Rebecca. And then other people, I think, rightfully read it as a romantic attachment. Mrs. Danvers certainly is obsessed with Rebecca, and Rebecca maybe, it feels like Mrs. Danvers is maybe the only person Rebecca ever liked.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're two sides of the same coin, basically. Yeah. There's this capacity for evil thoughts in and evil actions in the two of them that the none of the other characters in the book really have. Except maybe Jack Favell, but, you know, that's a family thing.
I think it's interesting in that, other than the narrator herself, it almost feels at times like every other character in this novel is an antagonist.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, basically, everyone in this book sucks. Even the narrator. Like, they're all, you know, they all, which obviously, like, that's true of people, I think, like, and I think that there's definitely a lot of social commentary going on here, especially in how she talks about this woman that the narrator is working for at the start of the novel, and how she's basically this, like, nosy celebrity hunter who doesn't know what to do with her money, and
never heard of someone like that.
She's terrible, though, and it does make you see why the narrator would jump into any way to get away from this situation. But I think that's a really interesting commentary on the sort of woman that Daphne du Maurier probably knew some people like that.
Oh, sure.
I think she had a very bleak view of human nature in general. That would be my guess from this and pretty much everything else she wrote.
Yeah, although yeah, she does very obviously love dogs.
True, cute dog, lots of licking.
Yeah. Jasper is the best character in the whole freaking book.
Why do you think she chose not to give the narrator a name?
It's an interesting thing because the book is so internal. And that's what later I'm going to talk about. I think that that's what makes it a challenge to adapt to the screen is because it's told in the first person. And a lot of it is really inside the narrator's head and her perception of things. And her biased narration of events. And there, I think it's one of the things that's really good about the book is how it allows you to get into her head in moments where it seems like she's almost having like panic attacks, maybe the way that it like talks herself in circles and stuff. And I think that maybe part of her not really, you know, she doesn't have a name. You don't really know that much about her background either. And she's never really described physically, obviously, because you don't like, you know, a good writer in the first person does not describe oneself. I think that part of that is that it's supposed to allow the reader to really kind of slide into the role of the narrator into this gothic horror.
I think also there, a lot of the novel is about her finding her identity, about, you know, about her finding, you know, her own way in the world apart from Mrs. Van Hopper and apart from Rebecca and, you know, the other, whatever may be expected of her in quotes as the Mrs. De Winter, you know, the Lady of Manderley, this grand estate.
Yeah.
I think the book is very much about the difference between the commoners and the, I guess, landed gentry, maybe, I guess we're talking about. They never quite say what exactly the Winter family's position is, but
they're certainly landowners.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you know, like, it's very much about the difference between them and how each class perceives themselves, as well as how they perceive other classes. So since it's about this woman who is like sort of struggled between two classes, like, what does this mean for her? Who am I now that I'm no longer myself? I'm Mrs. De Winter. And like, even Rebecca most of the time isn't referred to as Rebecca. She's mostly referred to Rebecca by the narrator. Most of the other characters still refer to her as Mrs. De Winter.
Right. Or the first Mrs. De Winter.
Yeah, Winter. And it's very, it's fast. And this jumped out more watching the movie, but it's very much about how women don't have an identity in this society. Mm-hmm. You know, they are wives and that's pretty much it.
And how she spends so much of her time trying to become what she thinks Maxim wants and what she thinks Maxim's sister and brother-in-law expect of her. And how I think that some of the most interesting parts of the book actually aren't the gothic horror-y bits, but are the parts about her having to go on these visits to these other people in the community and having to receive them, and they have to throw the party because everyone expects it, and how she, you know, doesn't know how to fit into this world. And I think it's a really, you know, kind of biting commentary on what life is like for women of this time, and particularly if you think that, you know, Du Maurier herself comes from a similar class. And one of the things I read talking about the novel was saying that if you look at Du Maurier herself, she's really, you know, you can see her in the narrator, but you also can see her in Rebecca and, you know, a woman who flaunts convention and who doesn't want to be what society has said she has to be, and who has, you know, there's some stuff written about Du Maurier potentially having had some bisexual relationships, having been bisexual. And I think you definitely can read Rebecca that way. And kind of, in a way, the way that she is punished by society at large through Maxim for being willing to be independent and being willing to take a stand and step outside of the role that she has been assigned.
So you think Du Maurier is more sympathetic towards Rebecca in general than most would interpret, ultimately?
I think so.
I don't think so.
Hey everyone, sorry to interrupt, but this is a preview of the full review of the novel Rebecca here on Next Best Adaptation, part of the Next Best Picture podcast umbrella. I want to specifically thank Nicole Ackman for volunteering to bring this series back. We hope that during this quarantine time that you all can read along with us and be part of this really exciting podcast book club. Be sure to read along with us next month for our next adaptation review of Charles Dickinson's David Copperfield here on Next Best Adaptation. You can subscribe to the Next Best Picture podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, Acast, CastBox, and also on Spotify. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can lend on over at Patreon. This is a preview of the podcast, so if you want to get the full podcast, you have to head on over to Patreon, where for $1 minimum a month, under Next Best Picture, you will get the full review here, along with other exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.
Welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.